Hey, Mets fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And Chris, we had delayed recording this a couple of hours today because we thought there was a chance that Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association would have come to an agreement on a start of the season. But we were wrong. We were very, very wrong. And here we are, 9:30 p.m. on Wednesday, March 9th, and there is no deal still. And it doesn't appear like a deal is particularly close, even though there's only a couple of things that seem to be, you know, major issues right now. It just seems like the owners and the players, to a certain degree, are really entrenched on what they want on what they're willing to sacrifice. And I understand that, like, in negotiations, you have to draw lines in the sand. But it seemed like today was going, if not well, if there was a lot of progress being made. And it's just very disheartening to be where we are, almost 100 days into the lockout, and feel like we are no closer to baseball than we were when this all started. So before we get into particulars, how are you generally feeling about baseball right now?
It's a thing. It exists. In theory, it is extra bizarre. And this is maybe comes off as a little bit off topic, but, you know, it's been over 2 years now since you and I were in Florida for a brief trip down to spring training. And for obviously a wide variety of reasons, that feels like it happened in a different timeline, on a different planet, you know, however you want to put it.
Yes.
So right now, like, the only thing coming out of Port St. Lucie that has players in it is minor league stuff. And it's just very bizarre to, you know, kind of see everybody, you know, doing that stuff. But from afar, it just seems like going through the motions while there's nothing happening on the major league side of things. So it's just, you know, as long as that feels like it's been mid-December when the Mets had, you know, wrapped up the pre-lockout portion of the offseason and, you know, really did quite a bit, that feels almost as long ago. So it's just weird. We've talked about it a little internally, you know, in Slack. And I know there are some folks who write for the site who think it doesn't feel that different, or at least a month or two ago, it didn't feel that different from a normal January, February, where there's not a ton going on in the baseball world. But I would maintain that all along, it's just felt bizarre. It very quickly changed from just this frenzy of an offseason. You know, there's really like look, the Mets traded for Francisco Lindor last winter. So, you know, things changed. But it felt like, okay, we're getting an indication of what Steve Cohen's ownership is going to look like in terms of spending money. And then they go and get a few good position players. And then the other, you know, if not the other best, certainly one of the other top five pitchers in baseball right now.
Yeah.
And that just feels like it was so long ago. So, yeah, it doesn't feel like the Mets are totally imaginary, but they're starting to feel more like a concept than a, you know, than an active baseball team.
You know, I feel a little bit silly for being as optimistic as I was when the lockout started. I had said that 2020 was a fresh enough wound that we weren't going to see people jumping, we weren't going to see people putting another shortened season on the table. They would threaten that, but when it actually came to doing that, then nobody would really do that because the lessons of 2020 were so still fresh in our minds. This isn't even, you don't even have to think back to the strike of 94. You have to just think back to how weird it was. I mean, we were watching old Mets games on the internet together in the spring of 2020. And because there was no other baseball, and we were desperate for baseball, and baseball was desperate for baseball. There was this real sense of urgency that we can't wait to get back to, you know, what it is that we do so well. And it just seemed like everybody had an understanding of this being a shitty situation that we all were going to get through together. And then on the other side of this, there was going to be baseball, and everybody was going to be happy about that. And that is like the polar opposite of what it feels like right now. It feels right now like everybody, and I'm not placing blame on the players here. This is gonna sound like I'm being nasty, like I'm being down on the players, but it seems like everybody that isn't in the union or an owner feels like there's a solution here. And for whatever reason, the people at the negotiating table do not feel that there is a solution here. Now, I still think that the owners are in the catbird seat here, partly because they could end the lockout tomorrow. This is not a strike, this is a lockout. And so if the lockout ended tomorrow, they could continue with the CBA from last year and just, you know, say or work without a CBA for a few weeks until this all is straightened out. Like there's lots of things that could be done. And I know those things are complicated. I'm not trying to make it sound like it's just as simple as flipping a switch and it's fine. But the lockout is ownership initiated, and that is why there's not baseball happening right now. And it's just maddening that here we are. It's maddening that this is the situation that we're in, that we can't seem to find a way around this, that we can't seem to be able to put the best foot forward for whatever reason. It's just, and I get the reasons. I'm not trying to make light of the labor dispute here. I think the players have the right and should absolutely be bargaining for everything that they feel they need. But they're so close right now. And I know this is just like the nature of labor disputes. I saw somebody recently say that we should never cover labor disputes like we cover sports, in the sense that there are people who are winning or losing them. And I've been really trying to think about that as I've been talking about all of this, right? That I don't want to think about this like it's a like it's simply a horse race. And so I don't think either side is winning or losing right now. But I think that the court of public opinion is about to turn on both of these groups even more than it already has. And so my question for you, Chris, is do you think that we are getting to a point where the sport itself is going to be hurt beyond like this season? For the Is this a problem right now that will extend past the playoffs this year? Or by that time, will we all have forgotten the lockout and things are hunky-dory again?
Yeah, I think if there is a lengthy season and playoffs happen, the World Series happens, I think everybody will have moved on. It's so hard from where we all sit because our baseball consumption is shared with people who are all, pretty avid fans. There's some variations in how people approach a normal regular season, but all of us, not just at Amazing Avenue, but everybody on Mets Twitter and everything else, we're all pretty tuned in, So
Yeah.
for the casual fan or somebody who maybe, I don't know, borderline interested in the sport or anything, hard to really get a sense of that from, talking only to people who really, really care about it. But yeah, I don't know. I think whatever negative effects there were among fans in '94 certainly had, I think, mostly to do with no World Series that year. That is just such a, such a significant thing to not have, especially when you've had most of a season.
Yes.
I mean, they played into what, August that year?
July or August. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure when the strike happened.
Yeah, I mean, I know it was fortuitous for one of my favorite non-Mets of all time, Jeff Bagwell, because he had had a hell of a year and got hit on the hand and I think broke a bone in there and would have missed out on the end of that season and wound up, winning MVP for it. So that was the silver lining for very specifically Jeff Bagwell fans. But to get that far into a season and then not finish the season and not, have a champion at the end of it, I think that's much more significant than like, oh, the season started in May or June, and the fact that we have a World Series winner who came out of a 60-game season in our very recent memories, mm-hmm. I'm sure it'd be debated no matter what, but I don't know if it's 100 games, if it's 120, 130, 40, whatever, anything in that range. I don't think people are going to get hung up on it too much or try to throw an asterisk on it if a team wins. I don't even feel like that's happening in retrospect with the Dodgers, and that wasn't that long ago.
No, I think you're right. I expected far more people to be saying stuff like, that last year's World Series was a legitimate World Series where the one before wasn't, or a real World Series. I really haven't heard much of that, and that's a good thing. I'm glad we haven't heard much of that, because I don't think that helps anything in any way to do that. I mean, it's fine. Like, I have a couple of friends who are big Dodger fans, and I'll occasionally tease them about it, but that's me just being a jerk. I don't actually think that, right? I think it's good for the game if we can just say, that was a season that was bizarre and unlike anyone we've ever seen before, and therefore that championship is, maybe you want to say different. I wouldn't even go that far, but it's good to not delegitimize that championship, in my opinion. But I tend to agree with you. I guess the place where I am worried about the fans of baseball is, when the COVID shortened season happened, there wasn't anything else that was clearly poised to take baseball's spot. Like, there weren't other things happening that felt normal. Like, the whole world was locked down and was scared and all of these other things. And so it wasn't like people who were used to watching baseball were going in and watching a different sport or whatever, and then it would be hard to get them to come back to baseball. The difference here is that the entire world is back open now. Every sport you could conceivably want to watch, you can watch. And, it just seems to me like if somebody truly was put off by this, it would be easier than ever for them to find an excuse, for them to find something else to fill the place of baseball right now. And so I'm a little bit afraid that people are just going to get out of the habit of watching, and by the time it comes back, they're going to have filled that baseball-shaped hole in their lives with something else. I mean, hell, you and I talk all the time about how you have gotten way more into soccer in the last couple of years, not because of the baseball situation, just because you've been getting more into it. But I'm sure that is making this time a little bit easier for you.
Oh, yeah.
You have another sport to watch.
Yeah, no, it is. And anyone who's known me for a long time, if they're a big fan of the podcast, they've heard it mentioned before, but if they're just tuning in now, like, what, him, soccer? It's definitely helped in a sense, and I've just sort of taken up an interest in it. It's on during the day, on the weekends it's on in the morning. If you're watching European stuff, which has been the case for me, and it's just sort of like this: okay, I'm taking a dive in, and I'm watching the sport generally. I've kind of attached myself to Liverpool in terms of the Premier League, but. Mm-hmm. Watched games that are you know, out of the five leagues that are significant, not to diminish any of the others in Europe, but like, you know, the five big ones that all have teams that I had at least heard of, you know, before I started watching any of it. But it's definitely filling that sports void a little bit. The Rangers have been a nice surprise for me in the NHL, obviously. You know, they, not that I thought they'd be terrible, but it's been a little bit of a climb back to, you know, this level of competitiveness. And, you know, they've been good, but they're always there, you know. The New York Giants have been a joke for way too long. So coming into the fall, I think somewhere in the back of my mind, the potential lack of baseball maybe factored into it, but it certainly wasn't an active decision in September or October, whenever it was that I was like, oh, let me give this a shot. It wasn't, oh, I'm going to be missing the Mets in the spring. You know, at the time, I didn't even know if I would like it. You know, because over the years, I don't know, sort of resisted the push for it. And hey, in my defense, a lot of soccer fans, if you aren't like on their level or express any negative thoughts or criticism or critique, kind of jump down your throat and just try to tell you why it's still the best game there is. And, you know, it's better than everything else. And I don't know, it's not a welcoming way to
like, right,
approach the sport. So given some of that, I just generally avoided it over the years. I think the last World Cup, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to watch this, and you know, put that little bit of effort into, you know, see it and experience that, because people always seem to have such a good time with it. But you know, this now like I could have a much more informed conversation about it and all that. So yeah, all of that is to say, it softens the blow for sure. You know, especially with the one team that I'm, you know, pretty much a fan of at this point has been competitive and everything. You know, going into it, I was like, I'm not looking to get in and then follow some team that's like constantly disappointing or
you have enough, you know, of that like, in your sports life,
right? You know, fighting for, you know, to avoid relegation, you know, and nothing like that. You know, there are some other interesting teams out there that are probably, you know, in the mix for those things, but that's just not like, nope, if I'm going to do this, like, let's see, you know, what's out there with something appealing, somebody competitive. So yeah, you know, that's where I'm at with that, but it definitely helps. And, it's just, you know, it's weird. I mean, for everybody who's been reading the site, it, you know, we've run some other stuff, but there's just not that much baseball stuff to talk about. And we still feel weird, you know, during season previews and all that stuff, because right now there's no season two preview, you know, it's just a,
right.
So we appreciate you sticking around. You know, we see that you're still reading Mets Morning News every day, but it's just this like depressing grind of just the same. So I'm looking forward to that, you know, just that like level of activity leading up to actual baseball games. You know, I don't miss spring training updates necessarily, but
Chris, don't you need to know who's in the best shape of their lives? Come on.
Well, yes, that is true. but yeah, no, it's just a weird void. And hopefully we get to fill it soon.
Cover Story, a new podcast from New York Magazine, is coming back for part two. So far, we've investigated the underground world of psychedelic healing. Now, we're going above ground.
I kicked the door down to be in the MDMA clinical trial.
We're leaving the cults behind for the world of labs and accredited institutions.
There are people who are just waiting for this, thinking that they're going to be better, and then they're not going to get better.
Check out new episodes of Cover Story, Power Trip, wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you've always wanted to read Moby Dick, now's your chance. My name is Phoebe Judge, and I'm the host of Phoebe Reads a Mystery. It's a podcast revisiting the classic stories you've always loved, and maybe even some you haven't gotten around to yet. From Dracula to Sherlock Holmes to Little Women, I read you a chapter a day until it's done. And our next book is Moby Dick. Let's read it together. Listen and follow Phoebe Reads a Mystery wherever you get your podcasts.
There are a couple of issues that seem to be the real sticking points here. One of them are the different thresholds for the competitive balance tax. What's very funny about that is there's essentially a Steve Cohen clause in that, where they want there to be an extreme penalty for owners who basically don't give a shit about the penalties.
Right.
Which is just, you know, first of all, it's just so funny to think about where we are now as Mets fans, thinking that, you know, 2.5 years ago, we had the Wilpons who would never come close to spending that kind of money. And now the Mets GM is basically, there's a clause calling for his head in the CBA. It's just very, very strange.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's nice to have a situation where, you know, these owners who want to cry poverty with their, you know, so-called small market teams, are worried about the Mets owner spending money. That, mm-hmm. you know, that's a nice change of pace. I think one of the things that I'd seen was that Max Scherzer, kind of scoffed at that, you know, that extra tier, basically the Cohen and maybe the Dodgers tier.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't blame him. And as far as we've read, Steve Cohen is kind of like, well, whatever, you know, I think he's going to be willing to spend, even if it means sharing some of his very large pile of money with some of his fellow very rich people.
Yes. I don't know if our listeners saw this today, but Cohen had liked a tweet that said basically the owners are never going to accept anything from the players. The owners want the players to accept their offer. They want it to look like it's their offer. And Cohen liked that tweet and people called him out on it. And he basically said, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even know how to retweet things. Which, like, from 29 owners in baseball, you might believe, but from Steve Cohen, that's some bullshit right there.
Yeah, no, it's a relatively small and certainly innocent thing, but I don't think anybody's buying that.
No.
It seems like one step removed from like, no, I didn't, as you hear him click.
Yes.
Unliking it.
Yeah. I mean, it is, I have wondered throughout this, because the owners have done a good job of being a unified front, as have the players. We have not heard many people saying, like, you know, this should be over by now. Or if they're saying that, they're saying that because of the other side. We have not heard anybody throw their own people under the bus. But I keep thinking throughout all of this how pissed Cohen has to be about this. Because last year he was operating as a brand new owner and couldn't really do too much for fear of pissing people off or whatever. And so this was supposed to be his first full off season, his first full everything as Mets owner. And Cohen does not seem to me, again, I am not one of those folks calling him Uncle Steve and trying to say he's perfect or anything, but I think that Cohen probably, of any of the owners that I have really read about or seen speak a lot, he seems to me the one that's maybe the most comfortable with the idea of paying players what they're worth. And so part of that is because he has more money than any other owner, right? But I just get the feeling that to him, it's like, well, we should just, you know, if the minimum salary is an issue, we should just pay them more. Because he can see, partly because he just bought a team. And he's a smart enough businessman that he's not going to buy a bad asset. So he knows how much money these teams make. And he's probably looking at it saying, why are we bickering about this little bit of money? Let's get this back on the road. But because he's part of this ownership group and can't... this is not like him not spending money. He really can't say anything against the owners, or he will be in, you know, a really bad position. But I can't help but think he's probably one of the owners who is probably most frustrated by this whole situation.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's pretty fair to assume that that would be the case. You know, he's still relatively young in that class of, you know, wealth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's got that going for him. But yeah, I'd be a little bit, annoyed that these issues are holding everything up. And, you know, I think from our perspective as fans, the CBT is really the thing that we should care about the most in terms of the Mets being a successful major league team, right?
Yes.
There's certainly moral and ethical questions related to the international draft and the existing system of teams signing players that we know can get very shady. You know, that is an entire topic of its own. Obviously, there's the rule change parts of things that could factor in. You know, as a fan, it would be nice to see players who are, you know, providing a lot of value to their teams in their first 2, 3, 4 years of their professional, you know, major league life, get a little bit more in terms of the, you know, not just being stuck at the minimum or barely above it. You know, all those things are things that I think are worth caring about as a fan. But specifically as a Mets fan who has been, you know, able to move on from winter after winter of what will the payroll be? Will it even crack $100 million in, you know, in New York City? That's behind us. So to be able to just look at it, I mean, and if the penalties are only money, I don't even really care what the thresholds are. You know, that's one part of it too. It's in the existing system, it takes quite a bit to lose draft picks anyway. But if that element were completely removed and it was just Steve Cohen's money had to, you know, go into the tax fund, then great. You know, like if Steve Cohen's going to spend $300 every year, no matter what, I don't really care if the threshold is $220 or $230 or $240. You know, right, I understand what the players do. And I do think it's good to have it higher and encourage teams to spend money and compete. But yeah, that's the one thing that, like, for me, is the standout thing.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think that there's an argument to be made that some of the stuff they're talking about would make for worse baseball. You know, I think that my friends that are very specific, very passionate, rather, about the DH will say that specifically the DH will make National League Baseball better because you won't see pitchers striking out all the time or whatever the case may be. And there's an argument to be made for that. But I would counter some of these other moves. Like, to me, the banning of the shift, I know people are going to see less ground balls topped over to second base, but I don't know if banning the shift actually makes baseball better. I don't know if any of the pitch clock, I think the pitch clock's a good rule change too. But, you know, I think that all that stuff is very much a wait and see situation. You know, I thought I would hate 7-inning doubleheaders, and now I kind of don't mind a 7-inning doubleheader.
I still hate it.
That affects
I hate pitch clock. I hate the DH.
I don't hate the pitch clock necessarily.
But what is baseball without Steve Traxel or Daisuke Matsuzaka like a 100-degree night in August, taking 45 seconds between pitches and just torturing us? Like, I don't know. That's part of the game to me. I understand the streamlining and, you know, all that. But I don't know. I feel like we're already nuts enough for committing to a sport that has 162 games per right. year.
I mean,
more if the team plays well. So yes. I don't know.
I don't think a pitch clock is going to save the game, but I think if we're talking about ways to just move the game along a little bit, I don't think it's the worst one, personally. But that's just me. Just make this work, baseball. Let the players get a little bit more money. Let all this happen. Right now, I feel like there are a couple of milestones every year that make me think of baseball. Many years ago, I think it was 2008 or 2009, my dad and I were in spring training for St. Patrick's Day. And so St. Patrick's Day, I always think about spring training. That's a thing that should be, you know, I should be watching baseball on St. Patrick's Day. And that's sort of the first day in the spring where I feel like, all right, it's time for me to watch a baseball game. And that's not going to happen this year. So that's going to be a weird one. You know, I'm going to be in LA in a few weeks for a work trip. I was supposed to go to a Dodgers Angels game the last weekend of spring training out there. That's not happening. That's going to sting a little bit. We're getting to the point where I think it's going to be very noticeable that baseball is not a part of my life. Right now, it's still pretty easy to ignore that fact. But once that becomes more of a regular part of my life, the missing baseball, that's when it's going to start hurting. And I think we're getting closer to that. So please, please, baseball, give us what we want. Give us some baseball. We beg of you. Anything else to say about this, Chris?
No, I mean, I look forward to it ending when we can start to talk a little bit more about the Mets and what they, you know, what they have ahead and what they still need to do in the off season before a potential season starts. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I just sort of forced myself to look at the roster resource page for the Mets on FanGraphs today. Something that I would be doing probably on a daily basis if things were normal, you know, mm-hmm. if the lockout had not been initiated. So just to shake off some rust and look and remind myself of, you know, who's on this team and what they still need and all that. You know, debating whether or not Tyler McGill is worthy of a starting rotation spot is more enjoyable than, you know, stretching as much as we can to cover like the length of a podcast episode talking about a sport that essentially doesn't exist right now until it decides that it does.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Well, let's get to something that never takes time off, no matter what, and that's music. Chris, what's your music pick for this week?
So this band is brand new, at least as far as like any of us are aware. You know, sometimes you like, oh, debut album might mean just first album on a label that's significant enough for people to notice. Mm-hmm. And whoever is handling getting this music in front of people who will like it has done an excellent job, because two other friends, when I mentioned them, had songs of theirs pop up in a similar fashion all within like the same week. And whether it was Apple Music, Spotify, whatever, you know, the algorithms all knew that like this band was making music that we would like. So they're from the UK. They're called Squid. The album's called Bright Green Field. And there's notes of like one song has definite strong notes of Fugazi, but that's definitely, that's not the only influence, you know. It's a band that can just do a bunch of different things and sort of blend in. Like the lead vocalist has a pretty great range of being able to sing, and then also scream and do both pretty well. You know, there's horns that get into the mix. There's some, you know, sort of Nels Klein inspired crazy guitar effects going on in parts of some songs, but it's just a, I don't know. It's a band that's catchy and, you know, did just caught my attention right away. So, they're coming around, they're playing a couple shows in New York City in this month, in just a few weeks. Hoping to catch one of those. And, yeah. Bright Green Field by Squid, which surprisingly is not a band name that was already taken.
It's always amazing to me when a band can figure that out, right? Like, it's there have been thousands of bands, and I'm sure that every major city in America had a band named Squid in it at some point. But the fact that no Squid had ever recorded for a major label, or at least a label big enough to show up like in a Google search, is pretty incredible.
Right.
Yeah, well, I you're now the third person to recommend Squid to me in the last, like, 10 days. So you're right. Whoever is in charge of getting their stuff out there is doing a very, very good job.
Oh, my favorite part before we move on to your recommendation. I knew there was another note. So Apple Music has these, like, they call it editor's notes or whatever, and they go into stuff. So I'm just going to read part of this about making their record, and they're talking about a smell. In the studio. So there, Carrie, whose studio it is, that's its last name, served them the Swiss melted cheese dish raclette, hence the stench, and moves on to describe the music a little bit more. But as somebody who took a trip to Switzerland and had raclette and didn't really think that it stunk, but really loved the concept of it and the taste of the food, I just appreciated that the, like, the little description here had that little extra that was like the icing on the cake for me. Like, oh, not only do I like all this music, but here's this relatively obscure reference to some food from Switzerland. and they were eating it in the studio and then worked it into, like, a funny story about, you know, the background of making the record. So,
yeah,
there you go.
That's very cool. So I'm going to talk about a record that's not new, nor is it new to me, but it's something that I have been really enjoying lately. And I always love it when you can like rediscover something that you've loved and it becomes even more you know, special to you, whatever. So this is one of those records I have no idea how it came into my life. I don't know if I heard someone play a song on the radio. I don't even know what radio station that would be. This is like pre-Spotify in my life. I don't know if I read an article about it or what, but there's a band from New Jersey called The Bongos that were around in the early 80s, sort of contemporaries of, like, the Feelies and that era, like, you know, of sort of not quite... It is certainly post-punk in that it happens after punk, but it is not necessarily post-punk as a musical genre. But their lead singer is a guy named Richard Barone, and he's originally from Florida, but has lived in Greenwich Village for many, many years now. And after the Bongos sort of flamed out after one of their tours, he put together a new band, just playing under his name, and he was approached to do a live show at the Bottom Line, the legendary club in Manhattan, and he decided to record this show. And so he wanted to make the show really special and not just do another sort of, you know, just a sort of run-of-the-mill show. I interviewed him today for something I'm working on, and he mentioned that when he was making this album, Mark Bolan from T-Rex came to him in a dream and said, "Are you going to make an album or are you going to just make a recording?" And that, like, challenged him to do more. So anyway, the record is Barone on electric guitar and vocals. He has an acoustic guitar player who also sings backup vocals, a cellist playing the cello, obviously, and then a percussionist playing marimba vibes and timpani. And the album's called Cool Blue Halo, and it's recorded totally live, and it's just an amazing performance. There's two songs by the bongos on it, three covers, a T-Rex cover, a Beatles cover, and a Bowie cover, and then the rest are all new songs from Barone that I think some of them have gone back and been re-recorded in the studio, but this is sort of the definitive version of all of these. And I love the idea of a live album of new tracks. A couple of bands have done this in the past. This was the original idea behind Let It Be, the Beatles album, was to do a live album of new songs. But I think that this has some of the coolest sounding lead guitar, just like the tone of his guitar, I love. And he told me how he got it, and it's a bizarre, like, I'm not going to get into the tech stuff here for the people who don't give a shit, which is probably everybody besides maybe Chris. But
I appreciate that.
He did a really interesting way to get the guitar tone, and he uses an Ebow really well on it. But the songs just sound amazing, and it sounds really timeless. And it's such a cool singular record. And this year is its 35th anniversary, so everyone should check it out. It's by Richard Barone, and it's called Cool Blue Halo. And that is our music picks for this week. Anything else you want to talk about, Chris, before we say goodbye?
Nope. I guess the way PSG got eliminated from the Champions League was kind of crazy today. But that's a topic for another sport podcast.
I will be worried about all of this when you actually start a soccer podcast. That's when I know I'm losing you.
Yeah, no. I think at that point, I don't know. I think I'll hold off on that. I think just getting into it and enjoying it and... you know, I can't go the full Jeffrey just yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although, does he have a podcast about Sheffield Wednesday? I know that's his team.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know. I feel like this is where the former Amazing Avenue crew will coalesce if baseball goes away for too long.
Yeah.
You'll all start doing some soccer stuff.
Certainly possible.
Yeah. by the way, I just saw something our friend Ted Berg tweeted that I feel like I should read on the air, which is Rob Manfred is going to get booed at every baseball game he attends for the rest of his life, and he didn't even get to live in Gracie Mansion first.
Nice.
Pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's the Gary Bettman treatment. Although, I don't need to dissect Ted's joke, but does Manfred even go to baseball games? Like, does he even like baseball?
I don't know if he goes to games, but I can tell you he doesn't like baseball.
Yeah. Then if he does go to games, they're not usually like honoring his presence.
No.
Yeah. No. But
anyway, in between your rage screams at Rob Manfred, go to AmazingAvenue.com. Check out everything that we have going on there, which, as Chris said, is not a ton right now, but we are getting ready for whenever this lockout ends. I promise you we'll have lots of good stuff for your eyes and ears about the Mets. But until then, keep checking in with us. Our own Dave C. had a good column out last week about just how much this all sucks. And he's right. It all sucks. So do that. Check out the other Amazing Avenue podcasts. Subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. Amazing Avenue is also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Chris is on Twitter at Chris McShane. I am on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. And until next time, let's go Mets.